Croeso and welcome to Tales for Wales, the pod that never fails to be a large presence in the podcasting world, to go to great lengths in its pursuit of history, and to go big time in dishing out the banter. As usual, I'm doing... I didn't like that one, no.
Didn't quite know what accent you were going for, because you kind of like,
I think it was
pulled
kind
your punches
of
a bit.
I did, yeah. You know what? It's because I'm running beers in me. I was doing a bit of I Love You Man, you know, where they're doing the Jamaican accent. That is what I was meant to go for.
Big time. You're a real bad man.
This is what I lacked. I lacked conviction in it, and it's let me down.
If I had it's actual, the most absolute... It was like,
oh, I just couldn't. No. I think it's... I'm on the Heineken Zeros, and as good a substitute as they are in terms of how they taste...
They don't let you do racist
accents. They don't give me that old... No. They really are. Yeah. Not giving me the fuel to do, like, borderline offensive accents. So, yeah,
real bad man. Yeah, exactly. I'm on the Pepsi Max with a slice of orange as well. But fear not, dear listeners, we haven't gone mad. We haven't lost our bloody socks or nothing. We're just having a little breather.
Yeah, what you call it, Chef. So it took it out of us somewhat, didn't it?
Yes.
We were shells of our former selves.
We'll say straight away, once again, we were fucking blighted by not being able to use. We bought like good mics and we still can't seem to figure out how to get.
We've got fucking drawers full of the things by this, right?
Like, but just we actually spend money on them
and
now.
We actually spend actual money on them. And then we go, oh, that sounds all right. And we do field tests, just FYI, dear listeners. We're not just like, you know, fucking raw dogging it. Yeah. So, and we do a field test. We listen to it. It's like, that sounds great. Let's do it again. And then for some reason, the equipment goes, I'm going to make a shit now for this next like half hour.
So I know we've got some listeners who actually are really good with sound stuff because they've helped us out in the past. Can you get in touch with us and tell us, just say, buy this mic. You got to have two of these things, blah, blah,
do
blah.
This. Tell us to do exactly what we need to do and we shall do it. Because we're getting a bit, I for one, getting sick of like going, let's buy this new mic. We do it. Yeah. Sounds great. And then it's like, oh, it doesn't work. For fuck's sake.
Oh, and also, before we forget, we've been sent a book, which we keep forgetting to plug, so we'll send over to you, Jack, to enlighten us on what this book is.
Yes, yeah, so one of our followers, a talented body named Gareth Lee Davis, he sent us a couple of copies of his kids' book that he's written. It's called Lucky Dragon's Lucky's Tale, and he sent us a copy, he gave us a message, said he was sending us a couple of copies. And just to you wanted an opinion, basically, I think, or a bit of feedback or anything. And because it's all to do with, like,
so you
Welsh mythology.
Him.
And I said, you know what, mate? You got to go back to the fucking drawing board. No, not at all, Gareth. Not at all, mate. I've had a quick read through it. It's good. I mean, it's obviously, I'm not the target demographic. It's for kids.
But if you were a kid or you had kids, you said to me before at the pub that you think it's really nice and well
It's actually really good. And it's like got little nods. It's got something for the adults as well. It's like a little Pixar movie.
It's like Shrek. It's forced generational.
Exactly. Yeah, the kids are laughing along, but the adults are all winking to each other as well. Reading it, like it's got little references to like King Vortigern, and it's got like it's basically the tale. No spoilers, right? But it's about Lucky, who's a dragon. Of course, and he hatches a little bit earlier than he should, and then it's his brothers and sisters who are still in the eggs. They get stolen, and he's got to try and like go on an adventure to get them back. And he basically runs a cropper, if you like, a load of different creatures from Welsh mythology. So they got like Lamhigan Adur on there, and they got like Turch Troeth and all this sort of stuff. But it's done in a very good way, like for kids. You know, it's like got bits in it, like highlighted words with like. Translations and like it's good. It's got little nods as well. If you look at like the illustration, it's very nicely illustrated.
And do
as
you
well.
Know how people can find the book, or is it still?
I don't actually know. Sorry,
what's it
Gareth,
called again?
If I let you down there.
Give it a
it's
shout.
It's Lucky
out,
Dragons. It's Lucky Dragons, and this one's called Lucky's Tale. I don't know if we're where to get it. Actually, I'm really sorry, Gareth.
You can get it on Amazon. You can get it on Amazon.
There you go. You can get it on Amazon. Of course, you can. Should have guessed. That would have been a. Head your bets on
if
that
if you
one.
Google it, you can find a few places to get it that might be a bit better than you can
but
get it from
good.
Paper books.
If you got little uns and you want to force Welsh history / mythology on them, like I 100% would if I had kids, get him one of these because it's pretty damn good. And apparently, I don't know if it's, you're making a series of these, Gareth. It seems like it's franchise potential with it. But yeah,
sell it to Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Just sell it, mate. Sell it to Disney. Yeah. Get them to do the legwork for you. But yeah, it's a good book, Gareth. Gaz, I was going to call you then. Gaz, mate. It's a great book, mate.
It does remind me so much of that episode of Gordon Ramsay's Kitchen Nightmares, where those couple hate each other. They're from like Mid Wales, and one's called Karen, and he's called something else. He's called Ka! They're doing his cooking, Ka!
Shouting across the restaurant.
Horrible.
Well, Gareth, you've done a good job at it, mate. So, yeah, if anyone wants to check that out, if you've got little nippers and you want to force some Welsh mythology on them, it's a great little booklet.
All right then. Right. Anyway, mate, how are you? What's going on with
you?
I'm
good,
then?
Mate. I've had the last 2 days off work. Whoa. Whoa. You sound like bloody Tim Allen from Home Improvement. Right. Drop that in here for the editor whoever's doing that. But yeah, I've had the last 2 days off inadvertently because guess who's been a silly sod and downloaded malware to his work laptop?
You've been malwared.
Like, I've been malwared. I'm just like one of those, I feel like one of those old colleagues, you know, who can't learn how to use Word properly and things like that. They never refuse to learn anything IT based. Yeah. I know better than this, right? But so I was lazy. I was trying to download something, right? I've got this old tablet. I'm trying to, like, upgrade.
That sounds like it's, like, mythical. I found this old written tablet.
This old tablet had these 10 commandments on it, etched into the stone. No, old, you know, what they call fucking, not an iPad, but an Android version. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Now I'm
becoming more and more like that fucking old person I'm describing. It's like a big screen that you can touch things on. And I basically wanted to upgrade that. Need to download something for it. Should have really gone and opened my personal laptop to download it because it's like the thing I needed is, you know, I have to look around for it on like, I'm talking like second page of Google type thing.
Oh, yeah.
But I opened my personal laptop, didn't have any battery charge. I was like,
so is work this laptop's right there.
No, this is personal use, my friend.
No.
So work laptop was right there. I thought, I'm not opening anything on the laptop. I'm just downloading, transferring over to an SD card. That's all I'm doing. What's the harm, surely?
Yeah.
I downloaded this thing, got a little bling, virus detected, fucking firewall enacted, shut down. You know, it was like fucking, I felt like I was in one of those really shit hacking montages, you know, where it's like, a guy on two different keyboards, like he's past the firewall, he's got a Hydra in the system. And basically I was like, oh, maybe that I'll just restart it, that should sort it, that normally sorts things out, doesn't it? And then the next day couldn't log into anything, no internet, no nothing. Phoned the IT department and this file I downloaded, I quote from the IT guy, it was infested with malware.
Oh no.
So I'm expecting like servers were on fire in like the main office. Like, it's breaking the system, it's buckling under the pressure. But
she can't hold.
I brought the company to its knees just by fucking using it for personal use. But so then he's like been quarantining it or something. Yeah. The last couple of days, he's like, I'll let you know. Last couple of days, I've been sitting pretty here, mate.
So what did work say? Did you get in trouble?
The only people who know so far are like she's not like my line manager, but she's like sort of above me and the rankings. And she was completely fine with it. She was like, oh, we've all done it, blah, blah, blah.
Have we all done it?
I was like, I've never done it before. No. Not in my 10 years of working here have I done it. But I got to go swap up my laptop. That's how bad it is. I got to go fucking get a new lappy now. It's like this one. That's in the bin, mate. That's so infested in malware. Needs to go or be cleaned or wiped or whatever. So I got to go swap it out tomorrow morning now. So it's been a nice couple of days, relaxing couple of days.
I got so much on my laptop that isn't meant for work stuff.
So if I use it so often, but this activity right now, do you think I'm using my personal laptop ever for that? No.
I record all this shit on work stuff. And like, yeah. Oh, God. We're open to malware. Oh, no.
So, yeah. Everyone, watch out for the malware because it'll nip you. It'll get you. But, get a new one tomorrow. But it's been a nice couple of days off. But unfortunately, because they weren't like planned days off, tomorrow is going to be a fucking hell because I have like two days worth of work to catch and up on. I had so many meetings booked in as well.
Really? Oh, shit. And it's a short week because we got Friday off.
I know. In a way, I'll be like, the thing is, tomorrow, I know what I'm like. Yeah. I'll be like, it's basically Friday. I won't do any work. I'll leave it till next Tuesday.
I'm on a run of 5 weeks where I'm either doing 4 day weeks or I've got a week off. So I've got a fucking, I'm buzzing.
You're ahead of the entire country on the old 4 day work week, mate.
Yeah, I'm on the 4 day work
same
binge.
Pay, 4 day work week.
Yeah, so that's pretty exciting. I'm buzzing for that. Mm. To be fair, if I'm being fair now,
Are you up to it much now? You're on your little detox, aren't you?
Yeah, I've been a couple of weeks off. I'm just because I'm like sick of always being hungover. So
should we tell the listeners our experience on that Sunday after Chepstow?
Oh yeah, that was bleak.
It was pretty darn brutal. It was up there. To give context, me and Frank's the absolute freaks that we are, right? We were a day out all day in Chepstow in the pubs. Yeah. Went back to my hotel room because I had like this, I don't know, it was like the
bigger
the loft almost, wasn't it? It was the bigger room.
And we started at like 10 a.m. for context.
Yeah, we'd been on it all day. And we had loads of rums up there. We were desperate to put on a DVD, but we couldn't get it to work, so we were just chatting away. What time did we call that? It must have been about
midnight?
11 o'clock.
No, is it a bit late?
Midnight?
Was it
midnight?
Yeah.
Midnight. And then midnight, and we were like, let's go to bed then. I was like, well, I'll finish my rum, and I'll watch something on my phone. And then I ended up not going to bed until like 5 in the morning.
Yeah.
And then the next day, Frank was like, yeah, same. I was like, oh, were you up drinking? Yeah, I found a bottle of vodka that I brought with me.
I already brought it because I was going to bring it for us for the train. So I was going to have it for us on the train, but we never needed it because we ended up getting like actual booze from Tesco's, didn't we?
Vodka on the train.
Yeah,
that's,
I know.
That's a new level as well.
Yeah, but it was only a small bottle. It was like a you know, not even a 75.
What's 50 cl between mates on a train?
And then I thought, if we don't drink it there, we'll have it for the end of the night. But then we and you doubled up and bought a fucking massive bottle of rum in Tesco, didn't we? So we were like, so we just had too much booze everywhere. And we've been chatting for about 14 hours. And I was just like, I'm so sick of yapping.
Well, it wasn't even like I was going, oh, it's a shame we're calling it early. I was like, I was all ready to be like, knocking on the head, mate. It's been great. What a great day it's been. And then it was just me and you both simultaneously in different rooms, like, I got to stay up till 5.
But we both wanted to watch films, but we only had our like small stuff to watch. I mean, we didn't really want to sit in bed together watching like
can you imagine under the covers together, sharing a fucking like what a fucking 10, not even 10 inches. Yeah. What is a phone?
Oh,
like
we'd
5
share
inch
more than 10
screen
inches between us, mate.
Oh, yeah. Very good. This is the kind of banter flowing on the night, ladies and gents. This is how good it was getting.
And we'd had like
so that was
12 hours.
That was
of,
the
like,
end.
Boozing, didn't we?
Yeah, that was the end of the night. We had to be out of the hotel by what 10?
10. Yeah.
So we'd have maybe 4 hours kip, get up, shower.
Yeah.
Slap yourself awake a bit.
Yeah.
Met up in Spoons down the road. Get some brekkie.
Yeah.
And then it was a lot of silence, wasn't it?
Yeah,
we didn't even
sit by each other on the train on the way home.
I think we know each other well enough.
Yeah.
I just walked past and I said, I just can't.
Yeah.
And then I didn't even look up. Barely noticed me. And I just remember texting you saying, mate, I'm sorry I'm not sitting next to you, but like the idea of like sitting next to you and like having thighs even just lightly pressing.
I'd kill myself.
Exactly. It's not. And then because I felt terrible about that, we were half an hour on the train with nearly a word said.
We also at the train station for about an hour, and I just sat on a wall away from you.
You were in the little shelter with me for a bit, and then you got out of it and walked away and went up and just stood on your own out there.
I was praying for death to come and get me. It's like, oh God.
The only thing you said to me actually was, I went, oh, I'm going to pop to the shop and get some bits, mate. Johnny, then you just went, Monster Munch.
I've still got all those Monster Munch in the house.
I was like,
right,
I'm sorry, like Monster Munch.
did I fucking stutter?
So I was like, right. So I was walking around the shop then and I was getting better. Right, don't forget the Monster Munch. It'd be fuming.
Didn't touch him.
Just like muscle memory.
Monster Munch will make everything okay. Everything will be fine when I have Monster Munch.
So because we didn't talk on the train, right, when we got off at Cardiff then, I was like, all right, come on then, give us a hug before you go. And you just went, no. And then just walked away.
I remember your face. You're like, come on then, mate. Give me a goodbye. I was like, fuck off.
No. I get it. Touching you afterwards, I would have been like, oh, why'd I do that? But I felt, I haven't said a word to him basically all morning. I should give him a hug to know we're leaving on good terms at least.
We're like, you know, as close as you can be as mates. And we it was just like we needed our own space. And
I literally texted you after I got home. I was like, I can't wait on the pod to be telling everyone about you just going, no, thank you, to like a genuine show of affection. He's like, no, goodbye.
We walking down the steps together. You're like, right there, mate. It's so rude. Like, no, enough.
This is me at the end of my tether, good sir. Yeah.
And then I came home and I was just so miserable and broken. Because I watched, what did I watch? It was like Faculty or something. I watched like some old school like horrors.
Do you need to try and bring yourself back to those? No, I mean, hopeful teenage years.
When I was watching them in my room, the night before. I was just watching clips the night before, And then I was like, why do we do it? Why can we never say no to the end of the night? Like, we always have to keep the night going. So
I think it's a genuine thing with, I'm not saying every guy, but I do think it's a very male trait to be like, if you go to sleep, the night is over and then it's done. You know what I mean? And then it's like tomorrow. Yeah. So like, if you stay awake, it's fine.
And because I'm always quite busy, it was just nice to have, we live with our wives. It's quite nice just to have room to yourself to just watch whatever you want and just like be able to watch a film and just, no responsibility.
Well, it was even that, wasn't it? It's for me and you, I think, going, let's go back. If we do it in our own rooms, I don't even have to share with my very like-minded friend. Yeah. You know, I can just watch what I want to watch, even though we've probably got a lot of overlap.
If the telly was working in yours, we'd just stayed in there. But and also, I decided I'm just having like 3 weekends off. So I'm doing what I kind of did in dry Jan. So I'm not going to drink now until the second. So
I'm not being as a Puritan as you. Yeah. Tonight I am. I'm on the old Heineken Zeros.
Yeah. And you had Heineken Zeros on Sunday, which I was gobsmacked at.
Yeah, that's not normally. Normally I'm a full blood Heineken on a Sunday or any old drink, really. Yeah. But I thought to ease off. My wife was just starting a new job, and I thought maybe don't on her first day be a complete and utter mess. She goes to brush her teeth, and I'm still in the man cave going, "Way, fucking watching films and whatnot." Yeah, so I thought, maybe don't do that.
And I'm back at the gym quite a lot now, like trying to do like 4 or 5 days, and if you're hungover, it's just fucking miserable. So I thought, you know what, I'm always going to booze. I'm not going to quit, but sometimes you do need to have a little bit of a detox, don't you?
Well, this
detox
is
till we got mega cocks.
Exactly. I'm doing this one, but I will definitely be having a drink. I guess who's going to another bottomless brunch on Friday?
And you went to one on last Saturday.
Last Saturday, Friday.
Problem.
They all blur into one for me. I'm a regular at these places. That's all life is, mate. If you're not trying to make your life a bottomless brunch, what are you doing?
I just realised we're like 20 minutes in and we've got a mega episode.
Oh, yeah. So we should get on with it.
All right then, mate. Anyway, I thought I'd tell you a little story, right, about a man called Llewellyn Ein Llewolaf. No, sorry, I got that wrong. Oh, God, I don't know any of this stuff, mate. I'm not from round here. Sorry, I'll start that again. Sorry.
Please do all of it in that accent and see how long you can keep it up.
Right, I think I'll start that one more time, but I'll do the whole episode as I'm from the Midlands. And I'll say to you, Thomas Shelby, right, by order of the Peaky Bombers. Look at this bit. All right then, mate. So I'll just try and do it like this for a while. We'll see how we get on. No, not really. Right.
I feel for our American listeners who may be thinking, what the fuck is going on with this now? Would they get a Brummy accent? Would they, think that was good?
Thank you. Worry about it. You lovely Yankee Doodles. We'll just do it in our own stead. Right. Don't you. I've got to stop saying right because I always say, right. Oh, right. Can you unlock
this thing? That's like you, how you calibrate yourself. Isn't it? Right.
Right. So this is the story of Llywelyn ap Iorwerth, also sometimes written as Ab Iorwerth, but better known in English as Llywelyn the Great, or in Welsh, Llywelyn Vawr. And I'll start by saying it's a travesty there isn't a film about him, because it's such a good arc. Mm. And I've always thought this, but hadn't really read a huge amount about the outside of battle stuff. I'd only really read about some of the main things he'd been involved in.
Yeah, I think I'm the same in that I know a couple of his battles, but not the life and politics.
So Wales had for centuries been at war with itself. And in the 11th century, Wales was divided into Piura of Walia, the areas ruled by Welsh princes, and Marcia Walia, so the areas ruled by the Anglo-Normans. So Piura Walia, I think, would be like Latin for like pure Wales. And then Marcia Walia is like the Marcia Wales is. So English barons, also known at the time of Anglo-Norman barons, they ruled lots of mid-Wales and South Wales. So Wales was a bit of a, there was a struggle between the three major powerhouses of the native Welsh kingdoms, which was Gwynedd, Deheubarth, and Powys. And they're often called princedoms because in Welsh they call themselves princes, because the translation of Tywysog means like better. It doesn't just mean like a prince, it's equivalent to like the ruler. So sometimes you might think like prince leader, sounds lesser. Yeah. But Tywysog means like leader, translates more powerfully than just the word prince. But this competition for power wasn't just between kingdoms, but rather involved dynastic struggles within kingdoms. I.e., it wasn't just Powys fighting to control Deheubarth, it was Powys dynasties fighting over other Powys dynasties to control Powys, and then to get enough powers to fight in Deheubarth. So you have fighting between these three major powers, and then within those major powers is infighting within them. So it's like war inception, struggles within struggles. So much so that between 1949 and 1066, 35 rulers were butchered at the hands of their compatriots. So 35 rulers.
So you mean 949 and 1066 as well?
Just say 1949.
1949, the 1940s, baby. War within wars in the 1940s. It is actually makes sense, 1940s. Yeah. War is upon us.
Yeah.
No, makes sense in the actual time as well.
So yeah, 949 to 1066, there was 35 rulers in Wales who were butchered at the hands by their own compatriots. It's only, so that's like, what's that, over 100 years? It's 35 people, like monarchs and rulers have been killed. It's only when a leader of exceptional authority and skill would there be any unity and ceasing of violence. But not only were they fighting themselves, but we also had the English kings to deal with, like I mentioned, these Anglo-Norman barons, and then the kings themselves. Overall, there was no less than 21 royal expeditions, aka invasions, launched by English kings between 1081 and 1267. And I'll talk more about what a royal expedition is. But then they weren't skirmishes or battles. These were like hugely funded war machines, but I'll talk more about that later. Mm-hmm. So these 21 royal expeditions, they don't include things like skirmishes and battles and, you know, other like quarrels, but
call a scrap perhaps.
Yeah. Or like, say parts of Mercia versus parts of Gwynedd when the Normans had conquered, they might have attacked, say Chepstow, but that wouldn't be a royal expedition. Royal expeditions are when the whole royal purse puts all this money into
the big war machine starts up. Yeah.
Yeah. So overall, there were no less than 21 royals, expeditions between 1081 and 1267. And during this time, you had kings like King John, King Henry III. And it was during these two centuries that the Welsh became much more united. These contemporary literatures that hint at the time that they collectively looked back at their ancestors as being Britons who ruled the entire island, and that during the Norman invasion from 1066 until 1282, the Welsh were unified in their suffering. Their suffering from the Marcia lords and the Norman kings, and like that became more egregious than fighting your cousins from Powys, for at least they were from this land. So they kind of put aside their differences to have, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend, that kind of
thing. I was just about to say that. You beat me to it. But yeah, I get what you mean.
So we have Owain Gwynedd, who rules Gwynedd for 30 years, and he bucked the trend of previous Welsh rulers because he kind of managed to unite and consolidate his power and hold power for, you know, for 3 decades. He was Llywelyn's grandfather. Then Llywelyn's uncles all fought and murdered each other after the death of Owain Gwynedd. So classic Welsh tale.
Classic, back to normality. Yeah.
However, Llywelyn's dad avoided all that. He was called Iorwerth Troendun, which roughly means like flat nose. So Troendun.
Flat nose Iorwerth.
And we are led to believe that his dad didn't engage in the power struggle because of his facial disfigurement and potential physical disability. So, although when he did die, Tesish Bryffwrth, sorry, it's a tough word to say, Tesish Bryffwrth, a famous Welsh poet, he was really kind and wrote this like beautiful poem when Iorwerth died, implying he was much loved despite his disfigurement.
Come on, lads. He was an ugly bastard, but we loved him, didn't we? He was our ugly bastard, wasn't he?
We also know, we don't know if something happened to him later in life or if it's something he was born with, so that he might have suffered it in battle and that's why he was disfigured, or this physical disability, or he's born with it. Part of Welsh law stated that only blemishes that would exclude an heir to rule would be those that stopped them forming their judicial or military duties, which could imply why he didn't get involved in the power struggle if he physically couldn't battle. Okay. So that's to say, if he was physically disabled and he couldn't fight, then he wouldn't be able to be the next ruler. He wouldn't be able to be heir to the ruler. So either way, he seemed to have been well respected no matter his ailment. So if it happened during a battle or it happened at birth, and the fact he didn't get involved in this power struggle kind of left him viewed as quite
a nice person.
Love
of the people, at least.
But when he died, Llywelyn left at an early age to Powys, which is where his mother was from. And given that Owain Gwynedd once plucked out the eyes and ripped off the testicles of one of his brother's nephews, Cynedda ap Cadwallon, you'd understand why a mother might think it prudent to hide a child away from the dynastic infighting.
I imagine so, yeah.
Yeah, so that's to say, like, they took what Gwynedd was this big melting pot of all these uncles and nephews and brothers killing each other, so they scarpered. It might have been to Ireland where he sought safety, which is where his great grandfather, Griffith ap Conan, was born, and where his uncle Malgwyn was exiled to.
Did a little episode on him the other day, didn't we?
We did do, yeah.
Griffith ap Conan.
Yeah. Yeah, so go back and listen to that if you've not heard it. Or they think, from a letter he wrote in 1212, that his mother might have remarried in Cowes, which is in Shropshire, and he was brought up there, hence why he was politically skilled at dealing with the Anglo-Normans. However, the point is, we don't know where he went, but it wasn't Gwynedd. So that's the important factor. He wasn't in Gwynedd. And he soon knew that that's where he should be. So he started this blood ascent back to his rightful place on the throne. So he... like, we know he left there, and we don't know how he left there, but we know he came back with a bit of a force. So he started fighting with his uncle, along with allies, who were these two young brothers who had ambitions against the more established uncles and cousins. So these three youngsters were like, right, let's join together. More of an alliance of convenience rather than like any true loyalty, but they had a common cause. So very early on, Llywelyn battles his uncle Rhodri on Ynys Môn, which was no mean feat, as Rhodri had married the daughter of the king of Isle of Man and was supplied with ships and Manx soldiers. So he had like a well-established army. And Llywelyn, one of the things you'll learn about Llywelyn, he's fucking mental and he's never like backs away from a fight. So he had the first battle and then he won it, and then he fought a second one on Ynys Môn. So one on the Menai and then one inland. Yeah. So it implies that they had a battle on the Menai, which is near the water, and then Llywelyn won and chased him through to the land in Coedennan. And he won both of them. And it's worth remembering that Welsh rulers during these centuries weren't rulers just because they had titles, or rulers because they were wealthy or controlled parliaments with like political guile or lining pockets. They were leaders specifically because they were warriors. So they fought, they were, their whole attitude was to fight really hard, be really physical and inspire men to follow them.
It's definitely like a leftover sort of trait from like the Celtic times, isn't it? You really they put a lot of weight into like... battle prowess and sort of being a warrior, isn't it? Yeah.
So that's the thing, that Celtic nature of being a warrior first kind of thing, a warrior-based society, really was prolific in Welsh history. And so the society was based on a warrior elitism, and where warfare was like how you decided who was in control of what. It wasn't so much political guile. And even though Llywelyn was young and new to battle, he's been written about as a young leader who was incredibly brave and leading the charges and fighting in the front where he was most vicious. And he didn't have a huge amount of money or much backing, so he didn't have like amazing armor and stuff like that. So he was very much up against
fierce. In all the annals, he was like, Llywelyn, dog.
Yeah. But it makes sense why he grew a following. Because he didn't have any land or money to begin with, he had to fight for everything. And people were inspired by this, by his like will and his courage. And those who fought with him were really well rewarded. So he was like, right, I haven't got anything to give you now. We win this battle, we're splitting it. So he was like, he managed to get people to follow him by being like a leader and in terms
people's
of like,
champ.
Yeah, the people's champ. By the time he was in his very early 20s, he'd regained land in Gwynedd and made several enemies, not least his neighbour and uncle, David. He gained notoriety as a prolific man-at-arms warrior prince and had poets praising him really early on. Even the poets of other princes noted him being this, they'd call him the bold beloved of fortune, the terrible Llywelyn. And we take that to mean like the literal meaning of terrible, to cause great terror. So like this guy was like, he was terrible. He was just like imbue terror into people he was fighting against. Some poets wrote that many were the foes of Llywelyn, but there fell of them in the fight seven times the number of stars in the heaven. So let's say like he killed so many of his enemies that it was seven times greater than the stars in heaven, implying he was always outnumbered, but he was his cunningness and guile.
Lovely little use of language by the bard there, or the bairdh. Yeah.
I read that the Welsh elites, so i.e. those at the top of society, were bred for war and trained from such a young age to use a sword and bow and the lance and how to ride and how to kill a man. So they grew up on war stories and dreamt of being immortalized in their poems and honored for like courageous deeds done in war. So Gerald of Wales, he said, so Gerald, we all know by now, he's the guy who went around Wales writing down stories and history. And he wrote the Welsh's love. He wrote of the Welsh's love for war and battle, and he even said, in peace they dream of war and prepare themselves for battle. Their only preoccupation is military training, and that they esteem it a disgrace to die in bed, but an honor to die on the battlefield.
I've said it before, but like all these, there's such a parallel I've found through reading, especially about the Celts, between like Celtic culture and like Norse culture. You know, you think of Vikings and like that sort of thing, Valhalla and a good death and that. There's so much of that in like, not just Celtic, but like you said, it's right through like the medieval culture as well.
Yeah. Well, there's another thing about Welsh people finding it dishonourable to grow a grey beard because you should be dead by then. So it's like they don't think you should live long enough to grow grey. And a further quote from it was, it was such a reproach to a son that his father should have died without a wound. So that's another part saying, if your dad dies from like pancreatic cancer, then I'm afraid your medieval son slightly resents you.
I also, dad went like an absolute puss with his bloody cancer.
There's also a quote I really liked. I thought it was funny. It was from an English chronicler called Walter Mapp. He said the Welsh were warlike and skilled, but whose chief glory was in plunder and theft. So it was like slamming the Welsh would be
bunch of fucking
sticky
thieves,
fingers.
Bunch of tea leaves.
And it does make sense how like a tailie who were like the royal guard, who all trained all their life for war, could easily cut down huge enemies of poorly trained soldiers who'd been called up for war. So like when a fjord was called, which is like, you know, when locals in an area in like Mercia, in like
Your levies, isn't it? Like, it's just your normal, your bog. It's just people essentially with like fucking pitchforks and stuff, isn't it?
Who don't really know how to fight. Yeah. How you could have a close royal guard or a tailie of like 25 people could easily fucking just hack down.
Cleave through you all, yeah.
But anyway, back to the story. So as hinted towards, his uncle David was not happy with the string of victories Llywelyn had got. With either support from the English or potentially because of English pressure, who were increasingly worried about this rise of this Welsh leader, they were like, right. So either David went to the English and said, hey, can you help me? Or the English, who he had good terms with, were
they
like,
were getting
who
a bit the willies up them as well. And they thought, ooh, let's do something about it. Yeah.
So Richard I, the English king, wrote to his chief justiciar, Hubert Walter, in April 1196, raising real concern of his Welsh territories because Lord Rees, that mad bastard we did, you know, when we mentioned before, who kept burning everything down, he was still alive at this period, so he was fucking burning loads of shit down in South Wales. Gwenwynin of Powys was a Welsh prince who was rampaging in mid-Wales, and then Llywelyn was cashing checks and breaking necks in North Wales, and he'd been victorious in Aberconwy, Menai, and Gwdenhai.
So a lot got to contend with, lots of spinning plates.
Loads. So this like trio of proud native Welsh leaders who were too strong to be controlled by the English, they suspected it was a lot of support like from the English for David, who was much more of a puppet and could easily be swayed. So in 1197, war broke out between David and Llywelyn. So his uncle or nephew, hot action. which I believe
sort of thing
that
would get many a click these days. Yeah.
There's a quote from the Chronicle of Walia which says, "There was a war in North Wales that came with a great army, as well as Englishmen as Welshmen. Thinkage to recoverage the land again, but Llywelyn his nephew came boldly and met him and gave him battle and put in Dafydd's people in flight, took Dafydd prisoner." So our young warrior prince had yet another victory, and not only had he added more valour and honour to his name, but this victory over his uncle consolidated his power and even took him prisoner.
The ultimate shame. Stick you in a fucking cell.
Exactly. And as I mentioned, he was a prisoner, but he was being supported by the English. So they ended up coming to his rescue in less than a year, in 1198. And King Richard's chief justiciar came and paid for his ransom. And Dafydd was then exiled from Wales, and he moved to his estates given to him by the English king in Haileswowyn until he died in 1203. So that's another person. Traitorous dog, but another person out of the way now for Llywelyn to keep marching forward. Mm. So things were looking good for the Welsh prince, having cleared out a lot of the Normans and beaten their own Welsh relatives to become leaders of their own territory. So these three princes I mentioned, like Lord Rhys and Prince Gwenwynim and Llywelyn, they'd done well to kick out the English and stop in fighting. However, Lord Rhys died, who was discussed as, we did a whole episode or two episodes on him. He was like the fucking strongest ruler in Wales. Yeah. He had inspiration. Boy. He was amazing. And he inspired other princes in Wales to be like, right, let's not be fucking dogs to the English and back ourselves. So when he died, Prince Gwenwynin saw it as an opportunity to become the new Lord Rhys. I don't mean like he was going to invade De Haybarth, but in the sense that he wanted to be seen as the next top dog in Wales.
Yeah, take up the kind of the symbolic mantle sort of thing.
Yeah. But in fact, he wanted to go one step further and become a national leader of all of Wales. So he wanted to unite the other princes who would still control their principalities, but would fight under one banner of Wales led by him. Yeah. So in the Brut y Tywysogion, which is like a really famous Welsh chronicle.
It comes up quite a lot, doesn't it, with us?
Yeah. It states that his ambition was to restore to the Welsh their ancient dignity and their ancient propriety rights and bounds. He managed to get the agreement from all Welsh princes he was after, and he began to attempt to restore Wales for the Welsh.
Oh, I just want Wales for the Welsh, mate.
So just Wales for Wales first, that's all.
He gathered a great host of soldiers from his own men and the men of other princes, and that included Llywelyn's men, and they laid siege to Payne's castle in Powys. So he took charge of the battle, and Llywelyn kind of was led by him rather than Llywelyn leading his own men. However, the assault was an utter disaster, and they lost swathes and swathes of men, including a load of Llywelyn's. So it was this ambitious Gwenwynin, but it was a complete failure. But it gave Llywelyn one really valuable lesson: to never give his men to a battle or siege where he wasn't the commander, and not to let others dictate tactics to him. So yes, it was a failure, but for him, he was like, right, I'm never doing this again. And he'll only ever be in charge of his own men.
I will be my own master.
Yeah, I'll be my own master. King John, in retaliation to this, then introduced a because he could see that it fractured and Wales failed to kind of unite. So he installed a policy of dividing and unstabling Wales with different charters offering each of the rulers land if they take it from each other. So he was turning De Haybarth against Powys against...
Turning the Welsh against Wales, yeah.
Yeah. So that kind of thwarted all three of their efforts to regain much power. And in 1201, a peace accord was written where he made peace and acknowledged Llywelyn as the most important Welsh ruler and would afford him Welsh protection, aka he wouldn't invade, as John was now looking to the land in France and having to battle with the French vassals who he had inherited, but was no longer interested in serving him. So he had all these vassals who'd turned against this new king. So with this peace treaty, which is the earliest written surviving treaty between the Welsh and the English, King John was looking for stability whilst he was away. The treaty was represented by the King Justiciar's new person now, Geoffrey Fitzpeter, and then the Archbishop of Canters, whilst the king is away. So originally he'd offered safe passage for Llywelyn to come to the king's, like, you know, royal court, but shit was kicking off with France, so he changed plans. But to show how serious he was about making this plans with the Welsh, he sent two of the most trusted advisors, who were also really well, like, highly regarded emissaries.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was an attempt to kind of impress and flatter Llywelyn. However, this treaty did now bind Llywelyn far more strictly to King John and was explicit in who was the superior figure between the two men. But this actually had peace for about 11 years between Llywelyn and King John.
Not bad, not bad. I was half expecting you to be like Llewellyn because he's too much of a dog. He couldn't abide yeah. it.
Well, it kind of worked out for a few reasons why it was quite good. So it started in 1199, peace treaty being signed again in 1201, and then homage was paid in person in 1203 up until 1210. But Llewellyn consolidated his position in 1205 by marrying Joan, Lady of Wales, also known as Siwan, who was the natural daughter of King John. So he's married the daughter of King John to show, like, ooh, that's how kind of close they were, and how much it was like, I think Llewellyn was very ambitious and was like, if I marry the daughter, you know, I'm seen as more of an equal.
Yeah.
So much so that he'd previously been negotiating with Pope Innocent III. If you call yourself Pope Innocent, I'm kind of suspect.
Pope Innocent, bro. I'm so innocent. That's my name. I've definitely never touched a kid. And my name is Innocent, bro.
Do you think an innocent man would abuse other swathes of children? I don't think so.
Come on, man.
But previously, before he married Joan, he'd been in negotiations with Pope Innocent III. Nothing to hide, the third Pope. It was like that when I got here, the third, to leave to marry his uncle Rodri's widow, daughter of, oh, this would be hard to say, Hrognvaldr Guardson, who was king of the Isles, so the king of the Isle of Man. So it's all like a Viking spelling. So he was originally meant to marry her, and he'd be, you know, a part of the family of the Isle of Man. However, this proposal was dropped when Llewellyn was really keen to build an established relationship with the English king. And they
in
all
terms
agreed
of strategy as well, much more powerful ally, isn't it? Exactly. So, you would swap them out.
And there was also, apparently, the relationship between Joan and Llewellyn was genuine. Like, he cared for her deeply. There's lots of things which I'll come up to later as well, but he really cared about this woman, which might be another reason why he went back on his plans to marry the daughter of the King of the Isles. And even more so, to highlight Llewellyn's close relationship with the English king, John invited him to march to Scotland to battle the King of Scotland, William the Lion, in the summer of 1209. And Llewellyn brought with him a bunch of Welsh noblemen, and this was like a genuine time of kind of cohesion and peace between England and Wales. And they thought it's the only occasion a ruling prince of Gwynedd was joined by an English king to carry out a military operation outside of Wales and England. So it's
I was
going to
say
time.
That sounds like a very unique sort of situation. Yeah. I definitely never heard of that.
So you obviously had like Welsh soldiers fight for English wars, and like England dude fought for English wars, but he wasn't a prince. He wasn't the leader of Gwynedd, which was the most powerful kingdom in Wales. However, this war in Scotland, it was over before it began, and there was actually no bloodshed, as the Scottish king submitted when he saw the might of this English army. This probably also made Llewellyn a bit nervous too, thinking what would happen if the king used his massive army to invade Wales with his full force, especially with English population being roughly 10 times bigger than Wales at the time. So he was probably like, oh shit, if Scotland...
Yeah, if this comes
king,
knocking on my door, I'm fucked.
Although it was inevitable that the English king would soon turn his ire to Llewellyn as this prominent Welsh star was rising to fame. He was like, right, I'm not having this. And there was the inevitable big fallout. And for context, we're talking about King John, who signed the Magna Carta, who history looks back as this shit leader. He's like the bad guy in Robin Hood. He has loads of insulting nicknames. I think we talk about going to the toilet on the John because of him. However, historians now say that in reality, he was quite a successful king, but with just fallible characteristics, like one being his ego and his anger and his readiness to fall out with his inner circle for like no apparent reason. Like he expelled people like William Barros, who was like a really important figure back in the day. He like expelled him really quickly and harshly. And we don't know for certain exactly why King John turned on Llewellyn, but he'd started giving away his lands, Llewellyn's lands, to his enemy, and they'd clearly fallen out of favor. So in 1210, a huge army led by Ranulf III, the Earl of Chester, along with William, Earl of Salisbury, and Geoffrey Fitzpeter, plus some bishops of Winchester and some of the important figures.
Even the bishops are on
even
the march.
Even the bish got involved. So this kind of highlighted the seriousness of which the English king's intentions were with how to deal with Llewellyn. He like got some of the biggest ballers to go and raise this big old army. And this army was vicious. It penetrated from the English border all the way to Conwy, where they were halted to rebuild Deganwy Castle, which shows Llewellyn's cleverness, because he knew if they got all the way to Conwy and they could have Deganwy Castle, they'd have his stronghold and be able to like reinforce and conquer from there. So he destroyed the castle before they got there. He was like, right, I'm going to slight this. So he broke down his own stuff. So this army was just huge. It was far too powerful for Llywelyn on his own to like battle. So he opted to lead raids against the English all over the shop. He was doing the classic Welsh tactic, but he was attacking them in Welsh territories, like areas around Connoy, and then in the Dee, and then in places, even invaded England. So he'd take his men and he'd ransack towns and burn them to the ground, especially places where the men had just come from. So they usually didn't have a huge amount of soldiers there, and he'd just fucking obliterate. So with all the lands King John had conquered, he then gave them to Llywelyn's enemies. And then when he got to Chester, he was fucking furious because Llywelyn had evaded an all-out battle and then just burnt down parts of Chester and damaged and attacked all his garrisons, and he lost loads of land. So he raised this huge, formidable army that was to crush Llywelyn. Like he was like, right, I brought in one expedition. That was when he had like, you know, the people I just mentioned, it was their soldiers. Yeah. Now he raised this formidable army. It was a royal campaign. So like I said at the start, it's a royal expedition. What that means it had the full might of the English crown. So huge war machines, siege weapons were built. Huge money was spent on getting food and supplies for the army.
Yeah,
taxes were raised. So they had to, like, it would cost England a lot of money to do all this. They had local men were called up to fight. They had loads of like woodsmen to chop down swathes of the trees and stuff. So it cost England loads to bring up this huge army.
Yeah.
And it was the first royal campaign into Wales for 50 years. But John was intent on succeeding where his father, Henry II, failed against Owain Gwynedd. So he was been 50 years since they've had such a massive campaign into Wales. Although this didn't deter Llywelyn at all. He wasn't ready to give up the fight, and he led ferocious night raids against this giant snake in English army as it moved deeper into Wales. So this giant army was far too big just to have like... it couldn't just march in one time. It'd march in unit.
It had to be in
stages. It had mostly because of food and supplies. You couldn't just have them all marching in one big bulk. So they'd walk in this big snake, and he'd attack at night ferociously. But what did foil Llywelyn was the king had turned his allies against him. So he had like Madog ap Gruffydd and Hwel ap Gruffydd ap Cynan and the sons of Lord Rhys to build his native contingent against Llywelyn. So he had the English and now the Welsh against him. And the only boys who stayed loyal were the grandsons of Lord Rhys, who were still honoured their grandfather's fire and never surrender
top
attitude.
Top lads.
But plucky Llywelyn knew he could outpace his giant slow army, so he decided to attack it where it hurts, in the stomach. So Llywelyn would burn down fields of grain and slaughter livestock to starve the English out of Wales. A contemporary quote at the time says the English suffered lack of food to such an extent that an egg was sold for a penny halfpenny, and they found the flesh of the horses as good as the best dishes. And because of that, the king, having lost so many of his men, returned in shame to England. So Llywelyn had barely lost any men, killed loads of English, like stragglers and those who were, you know, no pitched battle.
Starved them out,
and then killed them in these raids.
We'll starve them out.
So Llywelyn bested the English once again, and he thought he had time to recoup and get his like consolidated power again. However, in less than 2 months, in July now, furious King John returned with an even bigger army than before, and this time with a shit ton more food, so there was no chance that he'd run out of food. And it was such a large invasion that he couldn't even use that classic Welsh tactic of withdrawal to the mountains of Eryri. He was such a massive one that there was just nowhere to hide. So John did what no other English king had ever done before, and he crossed the Connoy and burnt everything in his wake. He got to Bangor and abducted the bishop, which was like a really unholy and brutal thing to do. The Welsh Chronicle, the Brut Tywysogion, states, Llywelyn, being unable to suffer the king's rage, sent his wife, the king's daughter, to him by counsel of leading his men to seek to make peace with the king on whatever terms he could. So he also states he had to cede so much of his land to King John forever. So not just for like for a short, this is now King John's land.
Yeah, that's yours now.
Yeah. So he grant the king the allegiance of whichever of his men the king chose and deliver a hostage, his own son. So he's given up land. His men will have to fight for the king. And he doesn't stop there. He had to give 10,000 head of cattle and 40 war horses and 60 normal horses.
Yeah.
But the worst part was, if Llywelyn failed to make an heir with the king's daughter, what remained of the kingdom of Gwynedd would then pass to the crown upon his death, giving the English legal right to the heart of Welsh power. So Gwynedd, the most important place in Wales, would now become part of English rule.
Steep price to pay.
Yes. So should we stop there? Because, well, this here is like the nadir, the low point of our plucky prince. But then he starts the la remontada, the comeback. So we got to work.
The natural point of end of part one.
Yeah, like I reckon so.
Isn't it? Yeah.
And then come back for a letter montada. I read on the BBC today, they're on about Real Madrid in football doing la remontada. And I keep saying it now. It means
just been dying to get something. It just means come back. Oh, good. I was going to ask. Context yeah. clues. I thought I knew, but I'm going to steal that.
Yeah, so should we stop it there? Because we're at the 15
minute mark.
There,
yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm intrigued, mate. Consider my interest peaked.
All right. Well, Dilcham Grandor, guys, drop us a 5-star if you can. We need to get some of that. We haven't plugged that in a while.
Yeah, and stay tuned for next week's episode, which is part two.
All right, Dilcham.